Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Tammy Carver. Welcome to the John Carver Show. My husband has helped thousands of people around the world lead happier and more successful lives. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, this show will help you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So the text today, I'm calling The Ugliness of Racism. The Ugliness of Racism. And you're going to find in the next 45 minutes or so that I won't be talking just about skin tone. In fact, I'll be talking about that very briefly, but there are several other forms that I'm going to address here today. The sermon seed, I call it, came from a talk that Dr. Tonia Evans shared in the last couple of months. And I want to begin by sharing some of his words that he shared that's going to give a springboard to what I'm going to share with you momentarily. He said, quote, "Every 4 years there are the Olympic Games where the elite athletes come together to compete. They have worked hard to be viewed and be seen as the very best of the best. However, when the gold medalist stands on the platform, they play the national anthem of that country in which they're a part, with their flag flying high, because it is understood that while this athlete used their talents and skills and their efforts, they represent a bigger part of the world. They represent a bigger kingdom. It's not just about them," he says. He says, "God has a kingdom. It's made up of citizens, some black, some white, some red, some yellow, and some Spanish backgrounds. His intention was never that the individual uniqueness would cause them to lose sight of the flag flying over them, the flag of the cross. America, in particular, is reaching an all-time low in this issue of race and culture and class. Just under the surface," he says, "there is the ever-bubbling problem that has gone unsolved." Again, these are the words of Dr. Tony Evans. He says, "We have voices about which life matters. All life is created in the image of God. All lives matter," he says. "However, underneath the banner that God has created all people in his image, there are uniqueness and inequities," he says, "that must be addressed. For example, the life of the unborn matters. And so there is this emphasis on injustice in the womb. But that injustice in the womb must be under the umbrella that all life matters. Black lives matter as a subset of all lives matter. So any injustices to a particular group must be addressed specific to that group, but under the banner that all life is created in the image of God. Samaritan woman in the Bible looks at Jesus, and after he offers to drink from her cup, she is shocked. She can't figure it out. You, a Jew, ask me, a Samaritan, for a drink of water? Why is this important? How did she know he was a Jew? He never identifies himself. He's obviously a Jew. His look, his dress, his accent, he's obviously Jewish. In other words, listen, quote, Jesus didn't stop being who he was to reach somebody else. He didn't find out how to speak Samaritan and find out how they dress. He was able to maintain his racial and cultural identity, even though he didn't let it get in the way of doing what his father called him to do. And that is to reach across the railroad tracks to each and reach someone who was different from him, who the rest of his culture would not reach out to. We'll get to that again later. God is not calling any of us to give up how he made us. He is not expecting us to use how he made us to relate to others and appropriately to people who he has made different than us. God is not asking you to be anything other than what He's made you to be, as long as you submit to how He's made you, to how you relate to other people who He has made different than you. He goes on. It is technically incorrect, to call yourself a black Christian or a white Christian or a Hispanic Christian. Listen. Then, he says, you make your color or culture an adjective. It's the job of the adjective to modify the noun. If you put Christianity in the noun position and your color or culture in the adjective position, you have to keep shaping the noun so it looks like the adjective that it describes. So, he says, so if your color stays in the adjective position, you got to keep shaping Christianity to look black or to look white or to look red. Again, this is the foundation of what I want to share, but it grabbed me so hard. I couldn't just paraphrase his words. I had to actually read them. He ends with, a lot of folk want to tell folk about Jesus who aren't willing to drink out of the cup. I want to get your soul to heaven, he says. I just don't want to deal with you here on earth. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? I'll witness to you, but I won't eat with you. I'll witness to you, but I won't drink with you. Jesus, listen, demonstrated by his touch, his sociology, gave validity to the theology that was to come. Let me read that one again. Jesus demonstrated by his touch, his sociology gave validity to the theology that was to come. Bear with me. If our pupils were right, we would have solved this problem of racism a long time ago. Let me rephrase that. If our pulpits were right, not our pupils. If our pulpits were right, we would, he said, we would have shaped this problem years ago. Slavery would have been solved. Jim Crow would have been solved. Segregation, all of this would have been solved. But because the pulpits, he says, were anemic and allowed to this evil to take place in America, we are still fighting this evil today. And then he ends with, truth overrides tradition. Truth overrides color. He says, black is only beautiful when it's biblical. And again, he can only say it the way he can say it. I can't say it the way he said it. But he ends with, you must be Christian first. If we could get enough Christians to be Christians before white, before black, before Christian, it doesn't take 240 years to fix this. It takes about 2 minutes and 40 seconds. These are the words of Dr. Tony Evans. This is the foundation. This is, you know, there's sometimes in your life, and I definitely know in my life, that words grab you. Words have a way from other people that have been around a lot longer than you or me, that sometimes are much smarter than you or I, and they just say it in a way that colors it in a way that maybe you haven't seen before. Let me give you another example before we turn over to Acts chapter 10. There was a man by the name of Martin Luther King Jr. who said, I have a dream that one day little black boys and little girls will be holding hands with little white boys and girls. Think about what he was saying at that time in that culture, in that era, with what everything was going on around him. That was a pipe dream. That was literally a dream. That was not happening at the moment. But I'll read his words again. I have a dream that one day little black boys and little girls will be holding hands with little white boys and girls. That was just the opposite of what was happening in that culture. Turn with me to Acts chapter 10. We're going to invest a considerable sum of time in Acts chapter 10 here today. Now let me just set the scene for those who might not know the backstory of Acts chapter 10. Acts chapter 10 happened about a little more than 12 years after Jesus died on the cross and rose again from the dead. Ish. It could be 10 to 15 years. So let's say about 12 years afterward. And you're going to see why that's important in just a moment or two. In Acts chapter 10, starting in verse 1, it says, now there was a man at Caesarea named Cornelius, a centurion of what was called the Italian cohort. Again, let me pause and share some more backstory. This is 2,000 years ago. The Italian government ruled a vast swath of land from Europe to the Mideast. So in Israel area, this was controlled by the Roman army at the time. Verse 2. A devout man and one who feared God with all his household and gave many alms to the Jewish people and prayed to God continually. I want to jump ahead, but I'll calm down. Verse 3. About the ninth hour of the day, he clearly saw in a dream an angel of God who had just come to him and said, Cornelius. And fixing his gaze on him and being much alarmed, he said, What is it, Lord? And he said to him, Your prayers and alms have ascended as a memorial before God. Verse 5. Now dispatch some men to Joppa and send for a man named Simon, who is also called Peter, whose house is by the sea. When the angel who was speaking to him and left, he summoned two of his servants and a devout soldier of those who were his personal attendants. Verse 8. And after he had explained everything to them, he sent them to Joppa. Let me pause the story. Stephen Cole writes, Peter was staying at Joppa on the coast by the water. It was a city where the prophet Jonah had fled to board a ship to Tarshish, and he was trying to run from the Lord's command. I mean, some of us know that backstory. Now, this was about 30 miles north of Joppa and some 65 miles northwest of Jerusalem. So they couldn't just jump in the car or jump on the train to get where they needed to go. Now, under this culture, this man, this Roman, was over at least 100 soldiers. And in that culture, the Romans thought the Jewish people as being less than human. So generally speaking, many of the Roman soldiers looked at the Jewish people or the culture or the group of people as, I'll say it again, less than human. So they treated them accordingly. Except for Cornelius. Let's pick up the story in verse number 9. On the next day, as they were on their way approaching the city, Peter went up to the housetop on the sixth hour to pray. But he became hungry and was desiring to eat. But while they were making preparations, he fell into a trance. And he saw the sky opened up and an object like a great sheet coming down, lowered by the four corners to the ground. And there was in it all kinds of four-footed animals and crawling creatures on the earth and birds of the air. And a voice said to him, Get up, Peter, kill and eat. Now let's pause again the story. Peter was living under the Old Testament law that said you're not allowed to eat certain things. You're not allowed to touch certain things. You're not allowed to hang around certain people. Now again, this is 10 to 15 years after Jesus died and rose again from the dead. This is 10 to 15 years after Peter had invested a few years of his life watching Jesus Christ not abiding by the Old Testament law. And that's a whole new sermon, but I'm going to throw a little bit of that in there. Jesus chose to hang around people that were non-Jews. And we're going to see in this story soon that Peter, even though he had walked with Jesus so closely, a dozen years or more after the fact, he was still not hanging around with non-Jews. Let's continue the story. Verse 14. But Peter said, By no means, Lord, for I have never eaten anything unholy or unclean. Verse 15. And a voice came to him a second time. What God has cleansed, no longer consider unholy. This happened three times. And immediately the object was taken up into the sky. Now, while Peter, it says, was greatly perplexed in mind as to what the vision which he had seen might be, behold, the men who had been sent by Cornelius, having asked directions for Simon's house, appeared at the gate. And calling out, they were asking whether Simon, who was called Peter, was staying there. And while Peter was reflecting on this vision, the Spirit said to him, Behold, three men are looking for you. Get up. Go downstairs and accompany them without any misgivings. Think about this a minute. Again, remember, these are the Romans. These are the people that helped crucify Jesus, that culture, that army, if you will. So Peter, justifiably, could have been terrified, okay? But the Spirit or God warned him that he shouldn't be afraid, for I have sent them myself. The sentence ends, verse 21. Peter went down to the men, and behold, I am the one you're looking for. But what is the reason you have come? Verse 22, they say, Cornelius, a centurion, a righteous and God-fearing man, well spoken of by the entire nation of the Jews, was divinely directed by a holy angel to send you to come to his house and to hear a message from you. So he invited them in and gave them lodging. Now that was culture. That's not because Peter really got it. That's not because Peter, you know, a light bulb went off in his head just that moment, later maybe. But in that culture, when somebody came to your house, you invited them in and gave them a place to stay. So the story continues. Now, think about this for just a minute, that Peter was told and raised, and his family and his family and his family and so on back, was told that you're not supposed to hang out with non-Jewish people. You're not supposed to hang out with people that eat unholy things, things that were not Jewish. In fact, it gets even deeper than that. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. That kind of gets a little graphic. Skip down to verse 23. So, and on the next day, he got up and went with them, listen, and some of the brethren from Joppa accompanied him. Now, I could interject, you know, my observation there. I could guess why they went. I might do that eventually here, but I'm tempted to, but we really don't know why they accompanied them, but that's another sermon. Verse 24, on the following day, they entered Caesarea. So again, it wasn't a car ride, it was the next day, so they had to travel sometime. Now Cornelius was waiting for them, and he had called together his relatives and close friends. Uh-oh. Think about this a minute now. A Jewish guy who had never, this is Peter's own words, I never ate anything unclean. You know, I never did anything dirty. I never really hung around the people. I'm a Jewish guy. But if you stop and think about this a minute, if I just pause the story, Peter was staying at the house of a tanner. A tanner is somebody who dealt with dead animals. In the Jewish culture, that is not cool. So was Peter kind of like cheating a little bit? Was he like, you know, as long as nobody knows, it's okay if I stay with the house of this guy that deals with dead animals, which in the Jewish culture even today is not acceptable? I'm not sure. But now we're talking, Cornelius met him in verse 24. But it wasn't just a meeting that was going to be with Cornelius and Peter. Oh no, we're talking a lot more unclean people, and I use that in quotes, okay? We're talking about a lot more heathens. We're talking about a lot more non-Jews that Peter was going to have to be touched by, potentially, or even kissed by, or hugged by. Oh my, verse 25. So when Peter entered, verse 25, Cornelius met him and fell at his feet and worshipped him. Now think about Peter a dozen years before. I think the Peter a dozen years before would have accepted that worship. Because if we all recall, Peter a dozen years ago was very arrogant. Peter, you know, there was a time when Jesus said, I have to go to this place, and Peter whirled Jesus Christ around and said, you ain't going nowhere, bucko, my paraphrase, okay? So Peter had, you're going to see in just a second, Peter had changed. Peter had evolved. In verse 26, but Peter raised him up, saying, stand up, I am too just a man. As he talked with him, he entered and found many people assembled. So Peter could have been very arrogant here, but he was not. So we see earlier, actually back in Mark, that Jesus barked at the Jewish people who would be adamant about washing their hands. In fact, the story in Mark was that the Jewish people were upset at the followers of Jesus because they didn't wash their hands. The culture of the day, and still is these days in that culture, is that you wash your hands in a certain way and say a certain prayer before you eat food. Well, the hierarchy in the Jewish culture at the time was barking at Jesus' followers about not doing the not doing the thing, the washing hands, saying the prayer, right? And then Jesus, he just body slammed them, like bent them in half over his knee, right? And told them, look, dudes, he says, you talk about people not washing your hearts, but your hearts are just nasty. My paraphrase, just nasty, and you make a big deal about washing people's hands. So in verse 28, now this is where, you know how you've been in conversation, and people insert a little slur, and people insert a little innuendo into a comment, or it's like, did they just say what they just said about me? Well, watch this, verse 28. And he said to them, you yourselves know how unlawful it is for a man who is a Jew to associate with a foreigner or to visit him. And yet God has shown me that I should not call any man unholy or unclean. Verse 29, this is why I came without even raising any objection when I was sent for. So I ask for what reason you have sent me. Now, we're not going to repeat this next part because I just shared that, but from verse 30 to 33, Cornelius tells Peter what happened. Okay, he had the vision and all that. We're not going to read this. So we skip down to now verse number 34. Again, I told you I was going to invest a lot of time in Acts 10 for those of us who maybe don't remember the whole story or have never heard the story before. Okay? So again, remember, this is about 12 to 15 years after Jesus was raised from the dead. So 12 to 15 years at least now, Peter was carrying in him this old pattern that Jesus said several times in several ways that he came to do away with the old system of doing this and doing that to appear holy, to look holy from the outside. Jesus totally turned that around. So he says in verse number 34, I most certainly understand now that this is now Peter talking, okay? In verse 34, opening his mouth, Peter said, quote, I most certainly understand how that God is not one to show partiality, but in every nation the man who fears him and does what is right is welcome to him. The word which he sent to his sons of Israel, preaching peace through Jesus Christ, and he goes on down, verse 38, you know of Jesus of Nazareth, how God anointed him with the Holy Spirit with power. Listen. Listen, this is Peter talking now. And how he went about doing good and healing all who were oppressed by the devil, for God was with him. Now, Peter knew this, but Peter didn't practice it because he was raised in this system that, excuse me, that he could only associate with people that were like him. I'll pause for the 10th time here today or so. That so many Christians, so many non-Christians choose to only associate with people that are like them. So that if we're only associating with people that are like us, then how can we influence, how can we help, how can we serve people that are unlike us if we choose to only surround ourselves and to hang out with people that are like us? So verse 39, we are witnesses of all the things he did, both in and of the Jews and of the Jews and in Jerusalem. They also put him to death by hanging him on a cross. So again, verse 39 says that we were witnesses. Peter said we were witnesses. He saw it with his own two eyes multiple times, and yet he still looked down his nose at people that were non-Jews. Now, we may not have that system in Christianity, but we sure have an attitude sometimes of looking down our noses of people that are not like us. Maybe who are not Christians, or maybe people who have habits that kind of rub us the wrong way. And I could go down a list of those habits, but we're not. So he goes on to say that in verse 40, God raised him up on the third day and granted that he become visible, not to all the people, but to witnesses who were chosen before by God. Verse 42, skip down. And he ordered us, listen, and he ordered us to preach to the people and solemnly to testify that this is the one who has been appointed by God and the judge of the living prophets. Now, verse 44. Now, this is where it gets mind-boggling, because has your mouth ever hit the floor that somebody that you didn't expect got something that you didn't think that they were qualified to get, or that they were smart enough to get, or they were, all that to get? Watch. Verse 44. While Peter was still speaking these words, listen to this, The Holy Spirit fell upon those who were listening to what Peter was saying. Now, for those who don't know, in the Jewish culture then and now, to be considered fully Jewish, little babies, male babies, had to be circumcised. That was in the Old Testament. That's kind of graphic here, kind of R-rated language here. But that was a sign in the Bible that you were God's chosen people. I'm going to share why I'm saying this now. Verse 45. So all the circumcised believers who came with Peter, listen to the arrogance here, were amazed because the gift of the Holy Spirit has been poured out on the Gentiles also. For they were hearing them speaking with tongues and exalting God. So Peter and those following Peter were religious racists. Now let me put this down in my language. And you don't have to nod, you don't have to acknowledge it. But how many times haven't you been eyeballed because you may be black, or you may be white, or you may be orange or green or red or whatever color, and because you have achieved a certain status, people looked at you like, could that be possible? Because you're this? Because in their eyes, up until that point, you were less than. Listen to what they're saying here. I'll share it again. That those who came with Peter were amazed because the gift of the Holy Spirit had been poured out on the Gentiles also. Then Peter answered, verse 47. Listen to this. Surely no one can refuse the water for these to be baptized who have received the Holy Spirit. So again, he then baptized. So go to the next chapter here, chapter 11, just a couple verses. Verse 2, and when Peter came up to Jerusalem, all who were circumcised, who were the Jewish men, took issue with him, saying, you went to the uncircumcised men and ate with them? Now think about the religious arrogance here. Think about the people that you have in your family, I have in my family, my former co-workers. There was a guy, I shared this before, that was from the western part of Maryland. I'm talking sticks. I'm talking, they have to pump sunlight back there. I mean, it is way back in the boonies. And I hired him and some people in that area, and we had an office in the Baltimore area, and it was about 75% of black versus white. And he came down to the meeting one day, and he was just overcome with his words, there's all these black people. Okay, you know, to me, it's, you know, as you know, people are people are people. And then, longer story short, he didn't stay. He chose to move on in his career because of all those black people. I happen to think that Peter missed out on a tremendous number of people that he could have influenced post-resurrection because he had this attitude up until this time in Acts 10 where he had this dream and this vision and then God, the Holy Spirit. Sometimes it takes for some people some sort of radical event to get this aha that, you know what, everybody's the same. I'm no better than anybody else. They're no better than me, again. And then we go down to verse number 17 in Acts 11. And he says, therefore, listen, if God gave to them the same gift as he gave to us, also after believing in the Lord Jesus Christ, listen, who was I that I could stand in God's way? Think about that a minute. You and I still today have issues with certain people that do not believe like you and I believe. Now, is that a form of racism? Is that a form of prejudice? I would say yes, because that's been a conviction of mine for a long time. And I don't want to get too deep into that at all. But you and I have had issues with viewing people less than us as in Christian folk, because they don't believe like us. Racism was and is thick in Christianity. There was a preacher, Dr. Evans actually, who he shared a member of his church came to him, and he says, his words, not mine. He says, Pastor, there's a whole lot more Anglos coming in to the congregation. I mean, you think you got to do something about that? And longer story short, I can't describe exactly what he said, but in essence, he said, if that's a problem with you, then you need to move on. And I think sometimes you and I have people in our lives who have problems with people that don't look like the one in the mirror, and then we make their problem our problem. And then that shuts us down emotionally, that shuts us down spiritually, and certainly it shut down Peter. Because Peter had this racist baggage that Jesus taught the opposite of it consistently. He went and hung out with people that were greedy, that were thieves. He hung out with the opposite religion as Jewish people. He hung out and touched people that were ceremonially, to a rabbi, unclean in order to bring healing to their lives. There's a story there, I think, that a lot of Christian people are missing in a big way. Christians followed, not, I would say, as recently in the last 100 years, Christians followed a lot of the teachings of Darwinism. And I'm not going to get into, I have notes to get really deep into that, but I think the whites of our eyes would pop on very quickly. But there was philosophies that Christians followed in the last 100 years that were completely opposite of what Jesus taught. So they followed the culture instead of followed the king. They followed the culture instead of following Christ's teaching. And I wonder how many of us today, probably not in the same way, I hope, but we follow more the culture than we do what Christ taught. And then when we follow more what the culture teaches, then we don't get the results of what Christ taught. And then our lives are definitely watered down. In fact, not more than 100 years ago, there were tickets being sold in churches to go see black people hanged. Tickets being sold in white churches to go see black people hanged. Now, let that sink in for a minute or so. Think about that. Tickets being sold in white churches to go see black people hanged. Was that Christian? Was that sharing? Was that loving people? Loving people? Or judging people based on their skin color? For those of you here in the room, you know that is a serious pet peeve that I have to calm my emotions down because it's such a pet peeve with me. Frederick Douglass writes, "The marriage institution cannot exist among slaves, and one-sixth of the population in democratic America is denied any privileges by the law of the land, which is to be thought of a nation boasting of its liberty, boasting of its humanity, boasting of its Christianity, boasting of its love of justice and purity, and yet having within its own borders, listen, 3 millions of persons denied by law the right of marriage." There are, I think, the few who can literally change a culture if they're not afraid to speak up against the culture. And so many of us are intimidated to step up and to speak up against the culture because the culture seems so much bigger than us, when in fact, the people that change the culture are the minority. Because I'm not talking skin color minority, I'm talking the people, the number of people. Think about all the technological changes that have happened over the years, over the last 25 years. It hasn't been by a large group of people, it's been by less than 5 that have changed the world. So if you and I think that we can't change the world with just you and or me, then we're totally, totally wrong. So the early church and some of the modern church is still full of racism. And I'm not talking just skin tone. I'm talking the personal habits of people that are not Christian. We get, you know, I've shared the story here dozens of times. There are people that call themselves Christians that are like the old Jewish culture in the Bible, that they choose not to associate with people that are unlike them because they don't want to be corrupted. They don't want to become dirty. But again, I go back to what Jesus taught. That's not what Jesus taught. So if this is what Jesus teaches and has taught, then shouldn't I mirror what Jesus taught and not the Old Testament law that Jesus said, I came to do away with the law, I came to do away with the old system? Over in Acts chapter 26, the Message paraphrase shares a story. Acts chapter 6, starting in verse number 19, the Message paraphrase puts it this way. These people got together and asked him to make a public presentation over at the Areopagus, where things were a little quieter. They said, this is a new one to us. We've never heard anything like this. Where did you come up with this anyway? I'm in Acts chapter 26. Explain it in a way that we can understand. Downtown Athens, this is about Paul talking. There was always people hanging around here, and natives and tourists alike, waiting for the latest tidbits on almost anything at all. So Paul, listen, took his stand in the open space and at the, I can't say that right, Areopagus, and laid it out for them. They don't want to make it plain. He says, when I arrived here the other day, I was fascinated with all the shrines I came across. Again, we're talking St. Paul now. Paul, for those who don't know, was a Jewish guy who prosecuted the new Christian faith that was just born in his lifetime. So we find that Paul was then, I'll use the word transformed, from being a person who tried to kill the Christians to now being a huge fan of Christians and now a recruiter for Christians, okay? So the story goes on. It says, I'm here to introduce you to this God so you can worship intelligently, knowing who you're dealing with. I'm in verse 24. This is a paraphrase of this chapter, or this text. He says, the God who made the world and everything in it, this master of sky and land, doesn't live in custom-made shrines or need the human race to run errands for him, it says, as if he couldn't take care of himself. He makes the creatures. The creatures don't make him. Listen to this. Starting from scratch, quote, he made the entire human race and made the earth hospitable. So and this text kind of goes on, but in that little phrase, in that little sentence, God didn't make the world as having, you know, one group here and one group here. He made the human race. So my paraphrase of that, there's really one race. There's not multiple races here. There's a guy that by the name of Mike Jan Condelli. I know I said that name wrong. Y-A-C-O-N-E-L-L-I. Mike Jaconelli. That's better. He says, I live in a small rural community. There are lots of cattle ranches around here, and every once in a while, a cow wanders off and gets lost. Ask a rancher how a cow gets lost, and chances are he will reply, well, the cows start nibbling on the tufts of green grass, and when he finishes, he looks ahead at the next tuft of green grass and starts nibbling on that next one, and he nibbles on that tuft right to the next one and to the hole by the fence, and then he sees another tuft on the other side of the fence, and so the story continues. He says, the next thing you know, the cow has nibbled itself into being lost. He says, Americans are in the process of nibbling their way to being lost. He says, we keep moving from one tuft of activity to another, never noticing how far we have gone from home and how far away from the truth we have managed to end up. He says, you've heard the term recipe for disaster, and I think you and I have a recipe for disaster every single day by our actions, by our heart, by our attitude. Because I go back to the Old Testament now, over in Micah chapter 6, it says, in one phrase, it says, he has shown you, O man, what is good. Listen. And what does the Lord require of you? It says to do justly. It doesn't stop there. It says to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. So if we're supposed to walk humbly with our God, there is no room for racism. There is no room for arrogance. There is no room for pride and ego if we're supposed to follow this to walk humbly with God. So the foundation of the opposite of the ugly self is really love, isn't it? That you and I are supposed to love people even though they don't practice the same way we practice, if they practice at all. Over in John chapter 3, the paraphrase of this text in John 3 says, this is how much God loved the world. He gave his son, his one and only son, and this is why, so that no one needs to be destroyed. By believing him, anyone can have a whole, W-H-O-L-E, and lasting life. God didn't go into all his trouble, all the trouble of just sending his son merely, listen, to point an accusing finger, telling the world how bad it was. He came to help, to put the world right again. And listen, I love this paraphrase. Anyone who trusts in him is acquitted. Is acquitted. Have you ever been acquitted or know people who've been acquitted? Anyone who refuses to trust him has long since been under the death sentence without even knowing it. And why? Because that person's failure to believe in the one-of-a-kind Son of God when introduced to him. I'm going to end with a story that has reaffirmed the... careful of my words. It has reaffirmed my evolving beliefs over the last decade or two. There's a book out called Loving Mercy. And it's about a gentleman, a preacher that had been around for a long time by the name of Justin Cornwall. And I think my father knows the name very well. And the story grabbed me in a way that reading it, I began to cry. You know, I'm a crybaby, and I'm trying not to here now. Just thinking about the story I'm going to share with you in a minute. Because so many of the Christians, in quotes, that have been around for hundreds and hundreds of years have missed opportunities when the opportunities were presented in front of them because of how they viewed other people, the way Peter viewed non-Jewish people. Let me share the story. This is by Simon Ponsonby, P-O-N-S-O-N-B-Y. Justin Cornwall, an American Pentecostal preacher who, after World War II, was invited to speak at a renewal conference in Germany. I end with this story. But Cornwall had a deep-seated grudge against the Germans and simply threw the invitation into the bin. Remarkably, when his wife emptied the bin, she spotted the invitation, pressed it out, and put it on his desk again. It haunted him for days as he shuffled around it. Finally, he reluctantly agreed to go. Arriving in Germany, he was not relieved of his disease, and the conference center turned out to be in the former headquarters of the SS, Hitler's elite guard, which aroused all sorts of images and old hatreds in him. He spent 2 days before the conference praying and fasting and preparing and avoiding the Germans. On the first night of the conference, he went down to speak and took umbrage of his translator, a somewhat stereotypical Aryan giant, blonde hair with a bun. He spat out his sermon. So it was no surprise it was badly delivered, badly received, and died a horrible death. He returned to his room and decided to go back to America the next day. Full of humiliation and emotion, he cried himself to sleep. In the night, he awoke to demons screaming in his mind, "You don't belong here. You have no authority here. Go home." 3 times these demons woke him up. 3 times he rebuked them. After the third time, he got up and asked God what was happening and why his prayers weren't sufficient and the demons kept returning. God spoke immediately. "The demons are tormenting you because you really don't have any authority here. You have no authority here, listen, because you don't love these people. Your authority to minister is related," listen to this, "your authority to minister is related to your love for those to whom you minister. Now you can go hating these people. pack up and go home tomorrow, and you can let me love them, or you can let me love them through you. Cornwall acknowledged his deep racism and prejudice. Too embarrassed to go home, he confessed his sin and asked God to love through him the Germans who he loathed. He knew he needed a miracle of grace. Immediately, he was overwhelmed by the Spirit of God and filled with Christ's love for the Germans. Having spent 2 days avoiding the Germans and refusing to eat with them, he could not wait for breakfast. He rushed downstairs to the queue for the breakfast and greeted and hugged everyone in the food line. When he got to his translator, he gave her a big kiss and hugged her. Immediately, she pulled back and barked, "You hate us." "No, no," he replied. "That was yesterday. Today, I love you." Justin Cornwall preached that morning, and the power of God was on his words. At the end of the sermon, there was a huge line of people waiting to speak with him personally, something he normally avoided. But he sensed God wanted him to be attentive to the people individually. One by one, people came and thanked him for helping them to forgive the Americans, whether because they had lost loved ones in combat against them or in bombing raids. Cornwall, he ends with, Cornwall saw pain and resentment cut both ways. Let me repeat that again. Cornwall saw that pain and resentment cut both ways, but the obedience to God heals historic hurts and unites us in the love of God. That story represented to me stuff I've gone through that has nothing to do with skin tone, nothing to do with skin tone at all, but with habits of certain people that I have been hurt by over the years that has caused me years ago to raise an impenetrable wall. And through God's grace and through time, has taken away those walls. Because now I look through lenses of love instead of looking through lenses of hate because of the habits of some people that they've had that have injured me. So if you and I understand that racism in any form is ugly, whether it's with St. Peter that had this view of people that were non-Jewish, or by a person's skin tone, or by a person's habits, it's all not what Jesus taught us to behave like. Jesus taught us to love where there are no boundaries, where there's no distance to the depth and breadth of love that we have for humanity. So if we consistently love humanity, if we consistently show love to people that don't have the same habits that we have, people will see, I think, God's love through us, because maybe they're racist against us and they're not going to come to us because they are racist. And I'll repeat it a few times. I'm not talking just skin tone. I'm talking religion. I'm talking habits. I'm talking lifestyle. They're not going to approach us. But when they see your love, maybe their walls will start to come down. So it's really up to you and I to take those first several steps in order to impact the people in your world for the better. I'm so fired up about my fourth book that came out. It's called Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks for a Successful and Rewarding Life. I've compressed about 25 years of knowledge, experience, and learning from a lot of people to help you in your life. You can get a copy of it over at TremendousLifeBooks.com. Again, TremendousLifeBooks.com. Here's some more information about it. For the last 25 years, I've visited with thousands of people in their homes. Many of these people I've met with have no goals, no dreams, no ambitions, and no roadmap for their life. I've seen so many people sitting on their front porches watching life go by. In 2006, my wife and I started building our home with bedrooms for each of our six kids. I always made sure that the foundation of our home was solid. I didn't want to take any chances with the lives of my family. So it is with life. My book, Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks of a Successful, Rewarding Life, is jammed full of ideas that can help you today. My book is a collection of ideas and short stories really designed to help you turn your life around and to help impact the people that you care about and that you love so much. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, Build Your Foundation will help you fortify yourself for a lifetime of success and to give you the courage to go for your dreams in life. Don't miss out on what you can accomplish. You can scale any height and achieve any goal. This book will help you get there. I have a passion to help millions of people change their lives. This book is easy to read, has short chapters, and can help you right now and change your life today. I believe in you. Thank you so much for listening to the John Carver Show. If you want more information about me, just simply go to my website, www.johnwcarver.com. Again, thanks so much for listening to the show today, and remember, I believe in you.
Thank you for listening to the John Carver Show. Please tune in again right here Monday through Friday for more insights and opinions on how you can reach your goals and dreams in life.